Good afternoon. We are going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is February 16th, 2015. And we're going to be opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5502, Department of Administrative Services. Paul, is there anything we need to be thinking about?
Mr. Chair, I might just note that there were a few questions on Thursday the department's provided responses for, and we've put those up on OLIS under Thursday. So is our practice to put answers to questions on the day they were answered or asked, and then we bring the answers in and put them on the day they were asked so we can keep track of things.
Perfect. So Director Jordan. And, Alex, are you coming up as well?
Yes, sir.
Please.
If it's all right with you, Mr. Chair.
All right, so it's your show. Run with it here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, or members. Oops.
Here it comes.
All right. This is day five of what will be, I believe, 8 days now. We had a small glitch last week. We've rearranged some of our presentation. The committee has asked numerous questions regarding rate setting and assessments. We're going to bring that to you this Thursday and have some time to go into those a little more in depth for everybody. Today, however, is all IT all the time. And we've restructured this presentation a bit so that we're going to do some high-level kind of enterprise-wide initiatives that we're working on right now, but we'll also do enterprise technology services section of our organization also today. So we're going to cover a fair amount of ground, going to move pretty fast, certainly open to your questions at any time. I have with me Alex Pettit, who is the state's, and I continue to say, new Chief Information Officer. Alex has been with us for about a year, but he had a rather rough onboarding, and we sent him to cover Oregon for about 8 months, and I think he still has some connection until all of that settles down. Alex is going to start with, again, a pretty high-level overview of we have four things to talk about before we get to ETS, really. Governance and how we're approaching a different governance structure for IT, how we do project management, and Alex will talk about what is the stage gate process. I'll come back and talk a little bit about core system replacement, what we call LSUP, Legacy System Upgrade Plan. And then Alex will finish with a review of ETS services, and then we'll get into the ETS budget part of our presentation. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to let Alex go. And I failed to identify myself for the record. Excuse me. My name is Michael Jordan. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the state of Oregon, and I'm glad to be here today. So, all roads lead through governance. So that's really the theme here for my presentation, is how everything goes through governance. And governance is very important. Without knowing what good for which people at whose cost, we're really not going to be able to have any kind of discussion at all about where we're going, what we're doing. There's three high-level aspects: governance mechanisms, decision domains, and approaches to decision-making. Who will make these decisions, how they be made, what decisions do we have to make, and what is the process for monitoring our results? All right, so we've got kind of a current state, a roadmap, and a future state. So I'm going to talk about the two ends of that first, and then go back to the roadmap. No centralized IT governance process. We've started a governance process with the Enterprise IT Leadership Team as a subgroup to the Enterprise Leadership Team overall that Michael Jordan had established. But right now, within the domains of what should be decided by what's in the domain of the agency, what's a shared service we're pursuing, and what's a utility service, we're in our infancy with that process, and we're working through that now. Limited cost and resource sharing across the state, agency-focused view to optimizing agency activities and coordination. Our future state is we will have an architected approach, multi-layered governance models that approve, monitor, and coordinate service delivery, provide a better return, and monitor architectural projects and processes to increase business value. Roadmap there is the transition from where we're at to where we're going. Focus on our immediate opportunities right now, and that's looking for low-hanging fruit and things that we can declare quick wins on. And then integrate the existing initiative for a statewide PPM tool that was approved by eBoard last December. So at really kind of a high level, you can think about this in three buckets. You got your utility services. Those are the differences that don't make a difference. Those things like telephone services. So dial tone is dial tone is dial tone. There are things or storage or compute or things like that. You can't tell the difference. It may say HP or IBM, but you can't really tell the difference on it to the end user. Shared services, those are those things where we have opportunities to collaborate across agencies, usually within a policy area. So case management, let's say in public safety, a case is a case is a case. Instead of having all agencies in public safety having their own case management tool, an opportunity for shared service would be from the time OSP here picks them up to the time that pardon and parole, that would be one case going all the way through. And then at the top are those things that are unique to the agencies, those things that really are agency-specific initiatives, things that are designed or tailored for the agency's mission. Child support software, paying child support payment software, for instance. Only the Department of Justice does that. Nobody else in the state does that. And you can see on the right, there are different groups or committees or governance structures, if you will, for each of those. Those then inform our IT portfolio and architectural design that runs through it all. So,
and I think I'd like to remind the committee, when we spoke of the CIO's office last week, we talked about this bar across the top, the strategic technology offices. That is the way that we are beginning to actuate on the ground every day relating to agencies, the people who will be, if you will, kind of the traffic cops about if an agency needs something, we want to make sure they're solving the right business problem. Also, if it looks like it's could be a shared service rather than unique to the agency because we have other agencies in the same situation, we elevate that to a shared service discussion at the governance committee. And then ultimately, perhaps it's something that really ought to be an enterprise level discussion. And so those strategic technology offices, one in each of the big policy areas, working together with the state CIO, are the way we're looking to actuate the governance model on the ground.
All right. So there are, and Senator Whitsitt had to suffer through this at my last meeting that we had, so, you know, when I was at the IT subcommittee. But basically, there are six, and Representative Nathanson, I'm sorry, my apologies. I forgot you suffered through that too, didn't you? There are six metamodels that we're working on in IT. We have one of them completed. There are five more yet to be completed. And those inform how we're going to do our processes going forward. So I don't want to get into a big discussion around architecture, but there's a location model, a process model, a distribution model, a responsibility model, a timing model, and a motivation model. We'll talk about the timing model next. So in cooperation, go ahead and kick me forward. In cooperation with the Legislative Fiscal Office, we've instantiated the stage gate model. That is a timing model. When do things happen? What happens and when do things happen? And you see, basically, I know this is rather complicated. My apologies for that. But we start from the left there with the common vision and work our way through to implementation on the far right. Underneath that, you will see different lists of concept, project charter, project plan, business case, detailed project plan. What those are artifacts, things we look for as a project moves its way through from initiation all the way through instantiation. What they should be doing is creating these artifacts along the way that we can tell how they're doing, how things are going, and they can be assessed for their quality and see if they really have their act together. What we want to do, if we can, is, well, what we've done for many of these is provided templates now. And what we will be doing with the PPM tool is these will be stages: origination, initiation, planning, execution, and monitoring.
We'll find one next.
Yeah. So this is just the high-level plan here. So you've got four stage level endorsements. As it moves from concept, from a high level plan to a plus or minus 50% plan, then it moves from a plus or minus 50% plan to what we call a plus or minus 10%, a detail plan, and then it moves into execution. Each one of those along the way, you know, we get somebody that comes along, they have a good idea, or they have a legitimate need or whatever, then we give them, you know, you go through and you give them the first dollop of money to go through and do a high-level plan, you know, a plus or minus 50% plan. They come back with that plus or minus 50% plan, looks reasonable, looks like it, they've covered everything, it looks like it makes sense. All right, you give them the next dollop of money, and we say, all right, go off forward and do a detail plan, you know, a plus or minus 10% plan. And at a minimum, a plus or minus 10% plan for whatever the first phase. Sometimes these are multi-phase projects, but we should know pretty closely 10% cost, schedule, and scope, what they ought to be done for the, you know, for what the proposal is. And then we move into the, after they get that done, it looks like they've got that under control, we move it forward into execution. And that's a racetrack over there, that gray box is a racetrack. As they complete milestones, as they complete phases, as they complete deliverables, those will, that racetrack will vary. If it's agile, that'll be a much shorter track. You have sprints and scrums and then a deliverable. As you go to something like waterfall, that'll be by phases. So, okay, I know. I'm getting too much into it. I'm sorry. I get that look.
We have a question here. We have a question. Look. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like for you to comment very briefly on what you mean by phases, and I'll tell you why I'm asking. I can envision that sometimes we just have enough money to do something in phases, or we're going to roll something out in one region and then another region. There are various kinds of ways of looking at what is phasing. My interest is piqued, though, in how you answer this, because in some other venues, when we've talked about contract accountability, we wanted to acknowledge that we didn't want a project to be broken into phases for the purpose of avoiding oversight, we need to consider the project in its full context. In other words, if a project is going to be reviewed, any project over $1 million, I'll just pick something as an example. You can't split it into a couple of phases. Well, this phase is $750,000, and then we'll have another contract for a different thing that, no, we're actually considering it as a whole project. So could you comment on what you mean by things happen in phases?
It wasn't an easy question, so it's not an easy answer. One of the things we've done is one of the loopholes that we've closed has been that we count both internal and external costs as we go through, and we ascertain if something requires oversight. Before, it was only external costs before I came here. Now it's internal. It's the total cost of the project. So a lot of projects that may have had an external cost that was under $1 million, when you incorporate the internal resources, well, then that is more significant. So that's been one. That's eliminated a lot of that. But the other thing is we want to differentiate between milestones or deliverables to a project and then what we call a logical chunk of a project. So if there is a logical chunk of a project where you could do a phase where something is a standalone, it's complete, that phase two or the second piece of this, like you were talking about doing things regionally. So you may do something in a region, and it may be determined that, no, we're not going to, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that we're going to stand on what we've done on the region. It is a completed deliverable, it's complete in what it doesn't depend on the next piece to make it valuable. That's really how I'd view that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, if I could add, the amount of rigor in the pre-planning phases where you actually define the business problem and you look at possible solutions to that business problem, if you do that with the level of rigor we're talking about here, you're going to define the size of the project, the scope. And if the scope is above some threshold, there may be reasons to break the project up into phases, but those are not reasons to avoid the contracting rigor or the other thresholds that we have in our processes, because the whole project is defined by the need. And so we'll use that as we go through this process. So I hope that helps.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Please continue.
Yeah. All right. So the next one is, and this kind of gets back, this is our location model, or however you want to describe it. This is another one of the models that we're looking at. This is actually from Gartner. They do something called pace layering. So you have systems of record. Those are generally those things that are going to be, that tend to lend themselves to a shared service, a payroll system, an accounts payable system, a human resources information management system, other systems that are systems of record, procurement systems, things where we're really going to, things where records are going to be kept, and systems that are enterprise usage, highly stable, standardized, built to last more than 10 years. There, if you think about it in terms of a building, that's the structure, the internal structure of a building. At the next layer, you got your clustered usage, your what we call systems of differentiation. Those are going to be our shared services, those things that would be a case management system specific to the public safety segment. And at the top are the systems of innovation. And that second layer, you can think of things using my building analogy. Those are things like escalators and elevators and things that are meant to last a long time, but will be or could be or need to be replaced without bringing the entire building down around our ears. And then finally are those things, systems of innovation, unique, experimental, ad hoc. Those are the bespoke things that I talked about at the top of my pyramid there that I showed previously. In Italian, they use the word modulare for furniture. And I'm sorry, mobilia for furniture. And the reason they use that, the reason furniture in Italian is mobilia is because it moves around so much. It comes, it goes, it's, you know, hit and miss. Those are those systems of innovation. They're not really meant to be, they're not meant to be long-term, and they shouldn't have effect on either the escalator, elevator type stuff, nor on the, of course, not on the structural stuff that the organization is built on. So with that, that kind of sets the frame then for what we're going, what Michael will talk to next with the legacy systems upgrade.
So really quick, I want to go back to page 7 or sure. slide 7, the busy one.
Yeah.
It's a lot of action items. I mean, it's a lot of steps.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not too many steps. I mean, we've got 4 gates, so well, you know, I, depends I, what you
yeah,
mean by
yeah. Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, as we look at the project plan and building the business case and the mm-hmm. detailed project plan mm-hmm. and, you know, going through from planning to execution to monitoring to closeout, we can't have expertise in all these areas. What are we doing when we don't have those expertises? And how are we evaluating when we do and when we don't and when we're buffaloing it? That's an Eastern Oregon term.
Well, there you go. All right. I'm familiar with that one.
Okay.
Chair Smith, thank you for the question. I guess the short answer is it depends upon the complexity of the problem. When we did the human resources information system and we were working on specifically the business case to it, we actually brought somebody in to help us develop the business case. In other situations, we will have – there really are – I know this is going to sound – I don't know. This is maybe not going to come across the way I mean for it to, but there really are no IT projects. There are business projects with significant IT components. Mm-hmm. But we don't, in the state of Oregon, we do very few projects that are specifically or completely IT projects. When we swap our infrastructure out, our switches and our servers and our storage, okay, that's an IT project. But the vast majority of the things we do are business projects. The business really needs to have a defined and significant business case in order to justify why we're doing this, you know?
So does the Office of the State CIO, do they have the authority to veto a director's plan for an IT project?
I'm a Lester
Chairman. You've got the muscle to do that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I used to have the muscle. Okay. As of the last long session,
now,
you gave,
Alex, you
gave
muscle.
Him the muscle. And there is a bill in this session which refines that definition of authorities in the state CIO's office. But the short answer is yes.
Okay, so let me follow up on that. So Alex, and I'm a little more informal than other folks, so please excuse me.
Please, absolutely. Me too.
So Alex, let's say the director of the Department of Revenue with his IT project is proceeding down a path and you're just not getting the answers that you need. You have the ability to say, we're going to halt right here.
So we have, and specific to that question, we inherited, when I came to the state, there were 18 projects that were under IT oversight from my organization. I sent out a request for all agencies to give me all their projects of over $1 million. That number jumped from 18 to 81.
Interesting.
When we found that we had 81 projects, there were several of them that were in flight. Those in-flight projects, we had to go back and figure out where they were in the stage gate, and some of them were quite far down the snake, if you will pardon the analogy.
Sure.
We had to say, all right, well, given that then, we've got to take them as they are. What are those essential components that we absolutely feel they have to know when they're done and what they're trying to accomplish versus, well, it's a little too late for the change management process. It's a little too late for the communications plan, you know. So we just go through and say where they are and take them as they were and deal with them as we could. There are several projects that have been put on hold while we cure those deficiencies, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for answering.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Fong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being a little late. Was testifying in another committee. But out of those 81 projects that you found over $1 million, what was the total asset value?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm sitting down, so just...
No, it was a big number. I have that in another presentation. I presented it...
I think we can, Representative, yes. we can get you the number, but...
Well, I'm just ballparking.
Billions.
It was over $1 billion.
Okay,
yes,
that's what I was wondering.
But I do not... I have the exact number in a presentation I gave last Thursday to the IT subcommittee.
Okay, thank you.
But
so let me ask a question. My understanding is you only have 3 analysts for this review process. And we've just heard that we've got multiple projects out there, but we don't have a request before us for more analysts. Why is that?
That's not true.
Do we have one coming?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. We have a POP in there. It's POP number 105, I think, a policy option package 105.
Okay.
And that is specifically going to request, it's my request to add both IT, what we call the STOs, the strategic technology officers, who work with the agencies on the front end of this process, on the origination, initiation, and then the planning, the high-level planning, and then the analysts. There's also several analyst positions in there to work with the planning, execution, and monitoring piece. So we have an ask in there for both of those. Yes, sir.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. That's good to know.
So, Mr. Chairman, one last comment before we move on to the legacy systems piece, and that is I want I know that Senator Whitsitt, Representative Nathanson know this because we talked a lot about it last week, but I want everybody to know that Alex's office and the Legislative Fiscal Office worked really closely in the architecture of this process, along with agencies, but what we really wanted to avoid is agencies having to go through 2 different processes. And so the IT analysts in the Legislative Fiscal Office and Alex's folks worked together to put the construction on this together. So we're trying to make a uniform system that is predictable and understandable by agencies and deliver better products ultimately. So another busy but colorful slide. We have realized, and this really started, some of you know, and I've mentioned the work that we did with Hackett about 2.5 years ago. The work here really emanated from that. It was the first comprehensive look at all of our internal service functions with HR, finance and budget, procurement, and IT. And I believe I've mentioned to you the story there is that we have aged core systems. They require a fair amount, not a fair, a lot of support to keep them running. They do not provide great data across the enterprise. They are inflexible, and they were custom written over 20 years ago. And so we literally have, you know, crossing guards at the crosswalks at lunchtime to make sure our programmers don't get hit by a bus because there aren't many of them left for some of these systems written in COBOL. And so and that was the genesis of us knowing we had an issue. The first system we brought to you a couple of years ago to start working on was HR information system, HRIS. It is the top line in the work. As we started to go through what Alex talks about, pre-planning, what are the business systems that need fixing, what would we actually want, as we got into that discussion, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, we realized that the industry has moved a long way since we wrote these programs 20 years ago. And we also realized that we were going to be looking at an integrated decision-making process regarding all of these core systems. So Alex and the Legislative Fiscal Office rightfully told us, we're not going to be forwarding you a lot of money to do an HR system until you've given us an overarching strategic plan for the replacement of all these core systems. How are you going to proceed? How are they going to be linked together? What are you going to do about all that? And so we went through that process with a lot of folks in agencies, and they really told us how they thought we should move forward on this. We presented the business case, or the preliminary business case, I should say, back in December at JCLAINT. And that's the one with the weird acronym. We concluded there that we had done everything we could do internally to move forward on this project, and our next step was going to be to move to the market. And so ultimately, I want to talk more about this, but I think the punchline for this replacement of overall internal business systems, and you can see the last time frame is year X, because this is a conceptual plan. We don't actually know all the phase times yet. The bottom line, we will never custom write these kinds of systems again. The industry has moved to a place where they have adapted, to the demand of users and have created off-the-shelf systems that do all the things we want to do and do it for a myriad of large customers like us with multiple business lines. The question for us is, if we buy off-the-shelf systems that are being upgraded over time for a myriad of customers, not just us, and we are able to configure them but not customize them, it leaves us then to really analyze our business processes, because that's what's going to have to change. If we're going to optimize new software that's off the shelf, it is not going to match up with our business processes that are primarily paper-driven, that are fractured in the way they're managed. They're spread across this enterprise all over the place. We mapped, just for HRIS, I have a slide on it, we mapped 46 business processes that we've got to go through and adjust so that a new HRIS technology will fit with a business process that we want to run, and we want to optimize that investment. Which means changing human beings and changing culture and changing organizational structure in some cases.
So, Senator Johnson,
big lift.
I apologize, A, for being late. I had to go testify on a fine piece of public policy, and B, stepping into the middle of a conversation and already having an opinion.
I'm shocked.
I know you would be. You talk about customizing existing technology to meet your business practices.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, if I said that, I misspoke. We have written custom software in the past for these systems over 20 years ago. We won't do that again.
Good.
And that begets us to really examine and alter our business processes, which is mostly about human behavior and the way we manage and those kinds of things. So I guess what the point I'm trying to make is we'll buy off-the-shelf software in some form, and I'll get to the alternatives in a minute. But it's really going to force us to look hard at those business processes and really change the way we do business to optimize the software that we buy. That's the punchline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got it just backwards. And so what I didn't want you to do was, you know, beat to fit, paint to match to accommodate all the bad behavior that's accumulated over 20 years.
That's exactly the issue.
I had it just backwards. Thank you for the clarification.
So the business case, the benefits, these are not rocket science issues for all of you. I just want to put a fine point on the two, one that says all human resource data in one place and the ease of data retrieval and reporting.
So let me ask a question. Oh, I see
certainly.
This list. I'm reading the list. How does this translate into financial savings for Oregon? And how is LFO and our team able to see that and calculate it and take those dollars and put them into other purposes? How do we do that?
Well, and when we did this in Oklahoma, and we had done a major implementation with a system with a vendor who will not be named, we had found that under GASB there were two types or two categories of savings: cost avoidance and cost reduction. Mm-hmm. We found very small cost reduction through that process. We found great cost avoidance. We found that we could increase our capacity for handling the increases in demand. We could increase our support of transparency. We could increase a lot of things that we were unable to do with the existing systems we had. However, they did not translate to cost reductions, as you're familiar with. It was really about avoiding things. If we continued to maintain the jalopy I had, it was going to cost me more than if I swapped it out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, also one of the complicating factors that we have found when we do these cost reduction, and the one you saw on leasing, facility leasing, is a particularly interesting example. We can pretty much document the amount there because it's pretty easy in the leasing world. It is difficult to gather those savings up because they accrue to different places and they are of different colors of money. Mm-hmm. So while you can calculate it in some cases, it also accrues across the organization into very incremental bits in agencies or in programs. And so what we like to say is our job here isn't necessarily to cut the budget. Our job is to get more money into direct service delivery and out of indirect costs.
Right.
That's what we're really trying to do. And we will work with LFO on how we can give you a better picture of how much that might be over time.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. Mr. Pettit, during the 2013 legislative session, they passed House Bill 3035, basically requiring the Department of Administrative Services to do a little better job on the transparency website. My words, not theirs. Some of the findings were there's one staff person assigned to manage and maintain the transparency website in addition to their regular duties. And with the amount of work already being performed and the time-limited resources available, it is difficult to make enhancements to the website, and the limitations to what data and data sets are already available is very minimal. So how does that dovetail within what you're trying to do here? But it sounds like if we want to know, and we do by passing more than one piece of legislation, forget transparency, and what we receive is we can't do it, essentially, again, my words. Could you just discuss that a little bit?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Whitsitt, our hope is that there are ways that we can accomplish it. It just depends upon what the labor intensity is required to do it. So just like with my PPM tool, we have no transparency today that's afforded to the state of Oregon for what's going on and what's in process of the different business projects with a major IT component. We just don't have that visibility. For me to provide that on a quarterly basis would require a labor effort that's pretty substantial. It's taken me a lot just to get on top of the projects myself, much less make that available in a transparent way. In Oklahoma, the way we did that was we implemented a PPM tool and we opened it up through OK.gov so anyone could see any project and where it was and what it was doing. It wasn't without labor, but it was with significantly less labor and certainly no redundant labor. As we go through and make this change, this uplift to our core systems, to what we call our structural or systems of record, that's going to make that process, the request that we've had for greater transparency, much easier for us to accomplish. Right now it's very difficult. It's a very manual process for us to accomplish that. It requires the synthesis of information from a lot of different systems to bring that forward and assemble it and amalgamate it, and then to present it.
Follow up?
Please.
We talk about, more labor. Apparently, we have one part-time person working on the transparency website. How much labor? I mean, right now, we're talking about redoing an entire system, and you'll be as old as I am, and I'll be dead before we get all this done, probably. So my question being, if we were to actually implement the requirements for the transparency website, how much labor? What would it take?
Chair Smith, Senator Whitson, I don't have the number before me how many hours it will take for us to do the. There is a bill right now that's out by Senator Thatcher, and I don't have a fiscal on it yet. I know that we're working on the fiscal right now. I can get that to you, and I'm happy to do that. And what that's assuming is in our current state, what it's going to take us to be able to perform those, to provide that level of service. That's what I can give you today. This, what Mr. Jordan's talking about with the legacy systems upgrade, is not being driven by a desire to, although transparency is certainly will benefit, that's not what's driving the legacy systems upgrade. What's driving the legacy systems upgrade is our systems are quite old and being sustained by folks who, just like what public safety found with their message switch, they do die. And that's what happened to public safety's message switch support person as he's passed on. And now they have to find someone, train them, and bring them up to speed on how to sustain the message switch. We're not in that dire of a situation, but if we do not address this, we will be. And that's really that's one of the big driving things for us is that the technology is so much more improved and requires such a different paradigm for us to support it and to use it. That it's almost like having an air conditioner that we continue to operate that's 20 years old. The new air conditioners pay for themselves.
Oh, I appreciate that follow-up.
Yeah, please.
But what I'm getting at is Senator Thatcher, previously Representative Thatcher, I think she's had a transparency bill that's passed virtually every year as long as I've been here, and some people think that's much too long. And yet we still have one person working part-time with a transparency website, and the report says basically it's pretty difficult and we don't have enough labor to do it, and our systems are such that we're not going to be able to provide you much more, is the way I read it. So I would think that would be highlighting what you just got through saying, that in order to respond to the direction of the legislature, you're going to have a lot of upgrades in order to get there.
Chairman Smith, Senator Whitsitt, I don't know that I'm saying that we have to have the legacy system upgrade to do the transparency that's being asked of us. I think that it makes it easier. Let me give you an example. One of the things that from our transparency website is very difficult to ascertain is how much money does the state of Oregon spend on tires? Just a very simple question like that. How much do we spend on tires? You can't find that out. You have to know each SKU, each code for each, because the tire that we use on a F10 pickup truck is different than the tire we use for the bucket truck is different than the tire we use for some other vehicle. There's no easy way, but you can ask a very elementary English question, and the system won't give that back to you. To provide a system that would do that would take an enormous amount of labor, and that's ultimately what we'd like to be able to get to. We need to improve our back-end systems, or we need to dedicate the effort and energy into that translation, that information specialist. And a half-time information specialist is not sufficient for where we're trying to get to with transparency in government. I would submit to you that we've done, and the state of Oregon has enjoyed several awards for having a great transparency website and providing a lot of information to folks for citizens that are interested in things that are going on. But we've done that at the cost of other things. And one of the things I'm trying to do is, as Mr. Jordan had illustrated, is bring greater rigor into the process of project management and project control. That demand on resources means that people that I had are a half-time person that's an ITIP analyst that's helping us do the oversight of projects doesn't really have time now to do that and do the transparency stuff. I've got to find some way to give some relief here.
Probably shouldn't beat it to death. Maybe we should talk sometime.
Okay.
Let's move forward.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to illustrate one example of the difficulty of our current PPDB and PICS human resource systems. When House Bill 2020 and subsequently House Bill 4131 passed, which required supervisor to non-supervisor ratios in agencies with over 100 employees, it took us almost 6 months to figure out what the ratios actually were in those agencies that had more than 100 people, because the data is so fragmented and is not have consistency. And so it took a lot of folks to figure that out. And now we have a way of tracking it, and so we kind of understand it. But again, a custom-designed side system to be able to do one question, really: how many supervisors to non-supervisors? So as we move forward with the HRIS business case, we've been going through the project planning phase. The biggest issue in this phase, you can see the things we've done through the project planning. The biggest and most difficult challenge to this project, as envisioned, is keeping a tight scope. When we talk to people in HR and we talk to business managers in agencies, that's great, you should do this. Can you add this? Could you make this happen if we do that? Could you add this piece so I can do what I need to do? And the toughest part of this has been to keep the scope tight, replace PPDB and replace the functionality of PICS. We'll do the rest in a second phase. So this is a foundational kind of system, and scope creep is one of our biggest challenges, for sure. So as we move forward as we did execute regarding the business case project, we had 12 different vendors come in and demonstrate systems. Remember, it's been 20 years since we were in this world, and it's changed a lot. So we had vendors come in and demonstrate a number of systems to the business people and have them evaluate those as far as the kinds of characteristics they thought were really helpful. We surveyed for shadow systems. The next line says 46 human resource business processes were mapped. If you were to imagine in your mind a matrix that on the vertical axis had 46 business processes and on the horizontal axis had over 100 agencies, boards, and commissions, how many shadow systems do you think there are out there? The maximum would be 4,600 if there were 100. I would venture to say, if you look at that matrix, and we have the matrix, it's somewhere between a quarter and a third of those boxes in that matrix are full. They have either an Excel spreadsheet, they have an Access database, they've got some other kind of system that they have produced in their agency to do a particular HR business process because they couldn't get it out of the core system. So we've got a lot of stuff going on out there. We've identified 810 requirements, categorized them.
We've got a question here. Oh,
excuse me.
And I apologize. Yes. And I apologize for coming in late. I was testifying somewhere else. All of those shadow systems put us at risk for security problems, right? Because
potentially,
if they're not, I mean, if it's just an Excel spreadsheet sitting on someone's computer, if it's not in within the official system, then it's not going to be protected in the same way. Isn't that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's correct. I can't tell you that all of those systems have secure data on them. It may be different kinds of data to monitor
sure.
different business
sure.
processes. So, but some, certainly, it could be a problem for us.
Thank you.
So it all adds up, if you will. The last bullet was we did survey agencies, and this goes a little bit back to that first slide I showed you that had the whole master plan of all the different systems on it. We did an encounter kind of with agency personnel to talk about what's the most urgent need of these systems. Is it budget? Is it accounting? Is it procurement? Is it HR? What is it? And which system are we most ready to move on as an organization? And it was overwhelming among the practitioners in the organization that HR is the one both most urgent and the one we're most ready to move on. What we've done, these are just some highlights. We are using QA. We've got a contractor that's been helping us with this. We have monthly briefings with LFO and agency folks. We have had the business case reviewed by tons of people, let's just put it that way. And lastly, this project is going through the stage gate process that the CIO has put in place. And so we're putting the same kind of rigor to this project as we would any other large IT project. We are to a point now where we think these are the things that have helped us to get where we are. We've, again, eliminated scope creep. That change control board in the first bullet has been a really important aspect to this. I also have to say, some of you probably don't know, I want to thank the legislature. They made a $2 million bet on us, basically, that we could go through this business case process and prepare something that's ready to go to market and ready to start to implement. And so I want to thank the legislature for that. And I cannot, again, the last bullet, I can't overemphasize the issue of change management and business process culture change that we're going to have to go through on this. And so as we go forward to actually putting in place new software for this, we are going to probably spend I don't know the answer to this, so I won't say it, but it's going to be a significant amount of money in the whole project on change management and business process change, let alone just the software implementation. We did also do an alternatives analysis for what's out there and what could we be doing. I think you can read that, although it's a little difficult. The first alternative A was just to keep doing what we're doing. We tried to both break down what would be the project cost to implement, what would be the operational costs over a 10-year period. We kind of estimated that the implementation time frame would be about 4 years. And so you get a 14-year total life cycle cost for the choice. As you can see, the numbers, the cheapest overall over the 14-year life cycle is the bottom one. Acquire a off-the-shelf system, make it a software as a service arrangement, and have the data housed in the cloud by the person, the group that you hire as the software as a service. I'm not saying that's the best alternative. What I'm saying is that's what came out as the least cost alternative. I'm sorry, Senator.
Senator Johnson.
A couple of things. First sure. of all, the time to implement this, where do you get into the kind of death spiral where the technology is accelerating faster than you can implement it? So that's question number one. Question number two is this housed in the cloud. I'm about to ask a question that will give credence to how little I know about technology, but I am told that in this world of hyperhackdom, that that is not a particularly safe place to be with this kind of privileged data. And last but not least, if we spend so damn much on Scenic trying to get these Uber platforms to maintain data in a secure place, why wouldn't our flagship most equal among equals agency use Scenic?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, there are a lot of questions there. I'll attempt to answer one, but I'll let Alex talk about the security issue in the cloud. You can see that one of the alternatives is alternative C1 is to acquire an off-the-shelf solution and house it on-premise at DAS. And you can see the cost difference. It's not extraordinarily higher than the cloud option, and in fact is less expensive than housing it with a vendor over the life cycle of the software. To your very first question, we're setting up this procurement and thinking about it in terms of a decade-long life cycle to use, at least. The thing about core systems like HR or accounting or finance or budget or procurement, while we do have law changes from time to time, there's no question about it, the actual doing of the business doesn't change substantially from year to year. Okay, we get new things from GFOA or GAAP makes a different change in accounting rules, but the basic activities of the work don't change dramatically. And so we do think that these core systems will have at least a decade-long life cycle. And I'll let you, maybe, Alex, talk to the security issue.
Well, the Chairman Smith, Senator Johnson, I wanted to use I used this analogy the other day about the speed of technology, as you were asking, and the analogy I like to use is a frog in a conveyor belt. So as the conveyor belt runs, the frog sits there, and then the frog jumps as far forward as he can when he absolutely has to, and then he sits there while the belt runs. That's one of the reasons why software as a service or IT as a service or platform as a service or infrastructure as a service or any of these as a service is really becoming the dominant model in my business is for exactly that reason, because when you jump forward, the belt is running so fast that you're right, you can't keep up with it. So to transfer that responsibility to someone else is from a technological management viewpoint, a much easier thing to do than continuously going through and having to update and upgrade. Otherwise, you do have a tendency to just sit there. When we had done this in a previous life, and we implemented the HR system, and then we implemented the payroll system, or the financial system. We had to go back and re-implement the payroll system because the technology on that had moved forward so far, even though it was an integrated package. And that was very difficult for us to do. So that's one of those things. You're always running on that belt, or you're asking somebody else to run on that belt. If you've got it as a service, somebody else is running on the belt. Insofar as the security of that is concerned, one of the places where we did a SaaS implementation was at Brown University, and we used a service provider, a hosted service provider for our HRIS solution. And what we found was that there are a lot of concerns around particularly the sensitive data for employee information, whether it be the Social Security number or what we call personal identification information, or PII. That's primarily what you have in an HR system is personal identification information. And there's three ways that we have to encrypt, or three times, when it's at rest, when it's in motion, and when it's in use. So if you have that, if you've implemented...
Isn't that like always?
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty much. And so when you have that, when you're sure that you've got that, then it's very, very, I'm not saying anything is impossible to attack or to take, but it's much more difficult to take someone's information if it's encrypted when they've got it up on the screen, or it's encrypted when they've got it in transmission, or it's encrypted when it's there at the site. That makes it a lot more challenging. That's about the best that we can do, is have it encrypted. Now, the location almost doesn't matter. You know, if it's in our data center, it's encrypted, you know, and using the public key encryption and blah, blah, blah. That's as good as it gets. It doesn't matter if it's 132-bit encryption in our data center, it's 132-bit encryption in Amazon's or in Google's or in IBM's or HP or whatever. That's really going to be as good as it gets. The issue is, where is it that we have the resources best, as you'd said, as you pointed out, Senator, to monitor and respond to and address those threats and those activities? We are constantly under attack from those things, and that's one of those things that is going to be a core business question for the state of Oregon. Is that a service that's core to what we do and where we need to make investment, or is that something that we're better off having somebody else manage on our behalf?
Senator Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. On this business case, does this include the HRIS capability for the entire government?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, it's for the entire enterprise.
Okay. So that calculates out to about $5 million a year for the next 14 years. What are you currently spending on equipment and, you know, to do that right now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, while I can get you a number for what we do for PPDB and PICS, it is very difficult for me to get you a number for the hundreds of side systems that are out there in agencies that we just talked about. So I can get you operation now for the.
Could you just give us an estimate? Are you spending more than $5 million a year?
Undoubtedly.
Significantly more.
Undoubtedly.
Well, the business case would be to bunch it and spend less money and to use fewer people to do a better job.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, while I can pretty much guarantee you, even without data, that a new HRIS system, no matter which alternative we pick, will be cheaper to operate and support than the current two systems we use, that isn't where the savings will be. The big savings will be in changing your business processes, eliminating paper, eliminating rework to a very great extent. And the actual doing of HR will be less expensive. That's where I think we'll see real costs, Senator.
And another possible benefit might be having a system that the average person could understand when you look at it as opposed to PICS.
Senator, I couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more. Believe me.
All right. So, colleagues, here's where we are. We have 33 minutes.
Right.
We're on slide 16. There looks like there's a whole bunch of slides in front of us.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see if we can get...
Got a few to go.
Let's keep moving forward.
We'll keep moving. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Conk, we have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Well, it's not really a question, but there's no better time to take a pause and have a little bit of hilarity. But our good presenter, Mr. Pettit, because I love somebody with an Oklahoma accent.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, and my best friend, she just says, you best do it right the first time. And your analogy about going on to the conveyor belt, I think that's a game called Frogger.
Miss Ma'am,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. So this merely summarizes what you saw on the previous slide, which we think is at least as we look at it now, the most likely alternative as we move forward. However, we haven't done the process yet. In January, we went out after our meeting in December with the legislature. In January, we went out with an RFI, request for information, to the market to get a number of different bits of information about how the market operates today, which is very different, as Alex has said, than the past. That RFI is due this week. To us, we've already started on the draft RFP for proposals this spring. We will take the information that we get this week from the RFI, and it will inform the structure and requests for proposals. We hope to get out with that in March. We hope to have it back before May, or by May anyway, so that we can actually come and talk with you about the project and which alternative makes the most sense. We expect to learn some things, both from from the industry, both on how they have changed regarding the relationship they have with their clients now, whether it's SaaS or off the shelf or a number of other things, and the issue of finance. We have traditionally come for these big IT systems to the legislature for capital financing to buy or build a big system. That's an antiquated form of financing in the vendor world that we know today. Vendors finance these things all the time, sometimes as a service, sometimes as just you buy it and we'll have a contract to own, you can own it and we'll operate it for you for a period of years. A lot of different permutations out there. I liken it to General Motors. General Motors isn't a car company. It's a finance company. They make their money financing cars, not selling them. And these big outfits with software have turned into finance companies, and they're working with their clients in lots of different ways to make those things happen. But through the RFP or RFI and RFP process, we will bring you what we believe to be working, of course, with LFO to be the appropriate proposal.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Jordan, I've tortured just about everybody that's done a replacement system with a couple of questions. Are lessons learned from Owen and DOR and Oracle and is someone sort of the steward of lessons learned? Because you can go back through Oregon's experience, and we have made just about every classic mistake you can make. I mean, the business case for Owen was laughable, and when you had people that were shepherding the business case as active saboteurs of the implementation, that's problematic. So I guess I'm looking for some reassurance that we're not in Groundhog Day and we're going to do this again, and we should be setting aside money for the next lawsuit when we screw up with another Oracle.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we are attempting to catalog all the mistakes and attempting to avoid them. I know that, for instance, all of the things you've mentioned are big projects, right? They're not necessarily the day-to-day operations of IT. They're putting big projects in place. The stage gate process is our attempt to, I should let Alex deliver the punchline, but fail quick and fail cheap. So you have stages at which you evaluate the project all the way along, and you put rigor on those stages, and we attempt to make sure that if a project is getting off track, that we either bring it on track or we reevaluate what they've already done through all the artifacts that he has put in place. So can I guarantee you that we'll never have a system that ever fails again? No. But
follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I guess I'd like to hear from Mr. Pettit. I heard this stage gate when we were doing Owen and the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. And mercifully, I don't think were in the jurisdiction when that catastrophic bomb dropped. But there, I was part of a legislative oversight committee, as was Representative Nathanson, and we must have said hundreds of times, there comes a point in these projects where you cross the Rubicon. You cannot go back home. You've spent so much money that it's impossible to go back and unring the bell. And we just changed the name of the project, basically hid it from public view and scaled it way, way back and got a deliverable out the door that met the minimum that was expected. I'm trying to figure out, on a project with this many zeros in it, where in that stage gating comes the point where you have gone too far to go home?
Well, Chairman Smith, Senator Johnson, you know, the thing that's very true, one of the lessons learned from my previous, my onboarding experience, is that in IT, failure is always an option. So they're simply,
we've made it the norm.
So that's really where, and ultimately IT, whether we really like or we're comfortable with this or not, IT is a discipline of failure. We do things over and over again, and we do it the wrong way, and we try it a little differently, and we do it wrong again, and we try it differently, and we do it wrong again, and then when we do it right, we stop. And it's those iterations of things, whether it's in radio. I used to be in RF tech, so I used to hang radios for a company called Metrocell Cellular. We got bought by McCaw out of Kirkland and then later by AT&T Wireless. Whether it was doing radios or whether it was with the implementation of a ERP solution, enterprise resource planning solution, which is what we're talking about HRIS as a component of, we will have setbacks. And as we do them, have we articulated our milestones closely enough that we recognize that we have a problem and we either course correct or we stop? We have that go, no-go decision with every milestone. And that's why in the stage gate, it's so very important that we do that. The other thing, though, that's true, and this is really what the stage gate is supposed to be doing, we no longer wish to fund good ideas. We have a lot of good ideas in Oregon, but we don't have a lot of projects. So we're trying to change that we no longer fund good ideas. We fund projects from now on. And a project has a very defined, and that's what that stage gate does. It defines a project, something we're going to deliver. And it may take us a convoluted, circuitous path to get there. And that's all right. But do we have an idea of what it is we're going to go to instead of saying, well, a very good idea of what it is we'd like to have? And that's, I would submit to you, one of the greatest challenges that I have right now as a CIO is trying to keep from bringing in solutions that will force the business to change the way it performs when it doesn't really fully understand what they do today. I can force architecture into the organization from the solution, from the bottom up. The problem is I don't believe that the organization really knows well enough yet what it's trying to accomplish so that it can inform the solutions from the top down. That's my guess.
Mr. Chairman, I've got to stop the CIO from throwing me under the bus. The organization doesn't understand what it's doing. I'm kidding. There was another question.
All right, let's keep
going. You mentioned we don't have a lot of time. So
we're down to 24 minutes.
Alex?
Yes.
Quickly.
Very quickly. So getting back to a comment that Senator Johnson had made previously regarding Scenic, it's been 8 years since the business case was identified with what it was the state data center or enterprise technology services was going to be delivering. This is a process at a high level of something that we've kicked off to go back and readdress what it is. What should IT be providing that is a utility service? 19 services were identified by representatives from, I believe it was 24 agencies, but it could have been 34. I had that in the presentation that I'm giving tomorrow in this room, and go through more detail there. But basically, we've asked the customers what it is that they feel are utility services that should be centrally provided. We're going to go through and identify how to go, and that's that IT utility advisory team at the very bottom. The director of enterprise IT transition is coming next week. He'll begin next week, and his job will be to help shepherd this. And then a change management vendor that will help bridge that difference between our current state and our future state. A finance team to try to inform.
Johnson.
Yes,
I got to ask you this. I lived through the change management at ODOT when it felt like there were people down in the basement reading the chapters ahead and then coming up and moving 5,000 employees around. What are your expectations for this change, culture change management consultant? What's the job description look like? What are they supposed to do?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, in my experience with IT changes, particularly up in Cover, Oregon, but in other places that I've had in the state of Oklahoma and other places where we've had major change go through, very often for the IT folks, it's simply a matter of articulating clearly what it is you're going to and then being consistent in that. So my expectations for the change management group are perhaps less about the business than they are about just saying these are the businesses that we belong in and why, these are the businesses that we don't belong in and why.
So this is just the IT team. This isn't the whole of DAS.
This is just IT.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
Madam Co-Chair.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Mr. Pettit or Mr. Jordan, but Senator Johnson alluded earlier to the Department of Revenue, which is undergoing its own big, rather big, core system replacement. And it's something that Co-Chair Smith and I and Mr. Borden, who's their analyst, and Mr. McSpaden and one of the IT folks in LFO have been paying very close attention to, sometimes to Mr. Borden and Mr. Smith's anxiety, but they have been incredibly responsive. My sense is that, I mean, I don't know how many of you know, but we rolled out a whole new corporate tax system in November. Mm-hmm. And you probably don't know it because nothing went wrong. And that's good, right? This was a case where no news was good news. It went, as far as I can tell, and Mr. Pettit, please correct me if I'm wrong, exactly the way it was supposed to. I mean, I'm sure there were some minor glitches, but you did not have hundreds of businesses calling and screaming or screaming to the Oregonian. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit, if it's appropriate to do now, about the lessons learned from that project, which so far at least is going the way it's supposed to. It's on time and on budget. About how we're going to use that. I mean, you said, Mr. Pettit, we get it right and then we stop. Mm-hmm. So if you could talk a little bit about how that's a model of our new process for how we do large IT projects and how applicable that is to what you're talking to us about here.
Madam Co-Chair, the revenue process was, or the revenue systems upgrade, the core systems upgrade, was really about a business transformation. And that's what they've been doing, is a business transformation. In this case, I said there are no IT projects except very, very few. This is one of the very, very few IT projects. This is really about the Enterprise Technology Services Group and what are the services that they should be providing. One of the things that I would submit to you that the IT people do is we are the ETS is really the geek's geek, if you'll forgive the analogy, that they are really the IT people that the IT people go to for those core type services. So when we're dealing with that, the change process is a little different. We work with our customers, we work with those that are our community, but we really need to work very closely with them as to what services make sense to be provided externally, what services make sense to be provided internally, and which services should be done by the agency IT people themselves. It's a little different project in that we don't have the compounding element of the customer and the business and those folks that are external to that. It's not quite as difficult, but there are very many things that come from the revenue project as far as the engagement of everyone, all the folks that are directly as well as tangentially involved in the upgrade or in the business transformation, in defining what that business transformation really needs to look like. We've spent a lot of time and are spending a lot of time right now really defining what business should ETS be in. After the Scenic project was completed, one of the reasons I think that the business case was not met was because that idea of what it was, the outcome that we had, was never fully vetted to a detailed project plan. There was a step that was skipped. So we jumped from a vision all the way down to our instantiation, all the way from saying this is a good idea to have a centralized IT provider, all the way down to grabbing equipment, moving it, and dropping it into the data center. We didn't go through a transformative process. We didn't go through a staged process for articulating and re-articulating and redefining what it was we were doing. That's what I would submit to you is one of the things that the revenue department did that we did not do previously with Scenic, that I'm hoping that we can do now.
So can you finish? Well,
this will go to a steering committee and then to the enterprise leadership team. Our prayer is that we will bring this to this that we will know what a phase of transformation is going to cost us as we do that within this for this next. Or to be incorporated in this next biennium cycle so that we can actually begin that process July 1st. So,
Are you ready to move, Mr. Chairman?
Please do.
Okay. Now to ETS itself, a section of our organization that provides technology services to a number of customers. Very briefly, these divisions, the service division is really the internal and external customer interface at the beginning of a process, helping them define their business problem, what are the possible technology solutions, and some initial cost estimates and scoping of the work. The engineering section, as one might expect, they're the group that actually engineers the solution, or they act as broker to reach outside the organization and get a solution for the business. Service delivery is about the implementation of that solution, whatever it happens to be, whether it's an engineered solution or one that we broker. Those are the folks that actually implement. Plans and controls are ETS's internal service folks, who does budgeting and financial management, their human resources, kind of their technology project management and account management. The technology availability people are the ones who keep the place running. So they're the ones when there's they monitor the systems, both network and computing and all the other systems. And when there's an outage, they're the ones who are the first on the scene to try and make sure it gets fixed. And then lastly, application delivery. We have some folks who both help with application development and then supporting the applications for DAS. These applications are the big ones we've talked about replacing. So statewide financials, budgeting, procurement, payroll, personnel, et cetera. Basically, we have a lot of customers in the hundreds, both internally and externally, local governments, educational service districts, a number of folks. This is a very simplistic chart that shows you from the customer's view, what do? On the right side of the slide, employees, citizens, et cetera, get on a device and try to access something, right? Our job is to provide an access point, network services, a secure access, so security in those things. People who get on want to do something. They want to run a program. They want to do computing, so we provide that infrastructure to do computing services. And then lastly, they're doing something with data. Right? Manipulating, deleting, adding, storing, et cetera. We keep track of that data for them.
Let me ask this question. Looking back on your previous slide, that you know, we provide services for cities and counties and ESDs and others. Is there a liability to the state of Oregon for providing these services should something not work correctly?
Mr. Chairman, while I haven't exactly examined that with the risk management people, I would imagine that we have a certain liability for any activity or partnership that we enter into with a client.
And again, obviously, I'm hitting you with a question.
Sure. I'm not exactly sure if, so for instance, if we were supplying, let's say, sir, access to our infrastructure to a city,
right,
and there was a security breach,
correct.
I would imagine it would depend on
where the breach. Data.
Well, again, I'm not sure of the answer to your question. I can look into it, though, Mr. Chairman. As far as liability is
Mr.
concerned.
Mr. Chair, perhaps that's a question that ought to be addressed to the committee hearing the expansion of the class action lawsuit.
Yeah. And I don't know, Rep. Nathanson, if maybe in your subcommittee that's a question at least looking into.
Mr. Chairman, we can get back to you with some kind of an answer regarding
low,
what our risk and exposure is on those relationships.
Sure.
We can do that. Let's keep moving. These are the kinds of services you might be familiar with that the data center supports, ETS supports. So the Oregon State Hospital, for instance, in public safety, driver's license system, criminal background checks, in revenue, the state income tax system, corporate tax system, et cetera. This is a really busy slide, but it's meant to illustrate the different platforms that we provide for computing services and for access. So we have three basic computing platforms, mainframe, mid-range, and servers, and then we provide e-government access for a number of different services across multiple agencies. As you can see there are big numbers associated with each of those. So we're way north of 2,000 just on this slide, applications that we support or services regarding eGov. And you have this slide that you can look at greater detail for each of those. So what are the benefits here? When we supply services to an agency, let's just say, and we're supplying all of their IT services, it leaves their personnel to focus on their business a lot more than on the business and the supporting infrastructure. The other thing, security. If we're doing the whole thing, we provide the firewalls, we provide the patches to applications, we provide an entire security system for folks, and we have personnel that have clearance to do that kind of security. We also have all of the hardware in a secure location. Their server is not sitting under someone's desk or in an unlocked closet. So the equipment is in a secure place. We provide 24/7, 365 monitoring. As I mentioned earlier, that group of folks who monitor all the systems all the time. And then lastly, the online and mobile payment processes. It is an exploding area of IT. Everybody wants to be able to do everything from their mobile device, right? Mm-hmm. And access to no matter what it is. We have a relationship with an outside vendor that helps build these sites. It is exploding. But our payment card industry level security is number one. It is the highest level you can achieve. So as far as those services, when we supply them, they're highly secure services for folks to use their credit card or whatever payment means on those. I skipped over the disaster recovery bullet because I have a slide. I think we mentioned this to you earlier. Since 2012, we've been entering into and growing a relationship with the state of Montana regarding full backup of all of our data and our programming. So we have just this last fall run a 10-day test on the payroll system, our personnel systems, our state financial management systems, and they can run completely remotely from Montana. So we would be back up and running in the case of a Cascadia event literally in seconds. So, it's a really good thing for us to be doing. I mentioned the online services and the relationship with NIC USA. Big number. We are now up to, last biennium, $4.4 billion of revenue that's come in online. A lot of that, of course, through the personal and corporate tax system, but in a lot of the others also. 165 different websites, 52 online payment apps. That, by the way, has doubled in the last biennium, I believe. Interesting note. 16 of those are online licensing payments. Maybe a possibility for a shared service there, you think. So we're working on some of those things. So service growth at ETS. This is being measured in a number of different ways. It's an index, if you will. It measures the use of mainframe, mid-range, servers, storage, and the network in a number of different indices, but it's a cumulative index of service delivery since the opening of the data center. And literally, it's exploded. A big portion of that is storage and traffic on network. The service level has been growing pretty dramatically. This shows you the base operational budget for ETS over that same period of time. The black line is that service line that you saw in the previous slide. That's the budget for ETS. And as you can see, while budget has gone up, there's no question about that, it has not tracked directly with the units of service being supplied. Now, some of that is we're getting better at what we're doing. Some of it is volume, no question. Some of it is better technology. As we put better technology in place on the data center floor, we get more efficient over time. Budget drivers. One of them is obviously the way we set the rates, and we're going to get into that this coming Thursday regarding the issue of rates and assessments and how they blend together. So that's a driver, and we'll have a more in-depth discussion about that on Thursday. A shared responsibility for the state technology spend. In other words, the more we can consolidate and take advantage of economies of scale, that helps our budget. And then creating those shared service models, as Alex talked about, to the degree we can get across agencies and get them to share services more rather than have to have a one-off application, we don't have to chase another application out there and maintain it and keep it going.
Representative Nathanson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jordan, hearing you speak about shared services again reminds me, while you both were making your presentations, I looked something up that I thought I'd remembered reading in one of the magazines that we all get. This one was from the Council of State Governments. The information is more than a year old, but I wanted to share with the committee, there was an article in this CSG magazine on state CIO priorities. And what we're hearing about today is what it seems everybody is talking about. It's about a dozen things. I'll read it real fast. Consolidation, cloud services, security, mobile services, budget and cost control, shared services, legacy modernization, disaster recovery, identity and access management, enterprise resource planning, security enhancement tools, networking, business intelligence and business analytics, and document content records management. Even though it seems like an awful lot we need to take care of, it doesn't mean Oregon is at the end of this story and we're far behind everyone else. I don't think it's true. I think all or many of our state governments are facing these same things right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, I think you're absolutely correct, and at some point potentially in the future, Mr. Pettit, when we have a little more time, could talk to you maybe about the nature of the nation, if you will, at least for state governments regarding these things. But I think your point's well taken. The drivers for us, environmental factors out there in the technology world, let's just face it, it moves really fast. Okay, it's changing. It isn't the rate of change, it's the rate of the acceleration of change that we have to try and figure out how to deal with. And as I mentioned before, these little devices that we all carry. You have as much computing power in your phone as we used to have in the 80s. You worked at a private utility. We had a whole floor that was a computer. And, you know, you carried the little strips down with the holes in it, or the punch cards, and
so I learned,
and you
program.
Came back with a ream of paper this big, you know, and you had to put it in a wheelbarrow to get it back to your office. You have as much computing power in your phone as they had. So it's just an incredibly changing environment. Thus, the conversation about software as a service, perhaps other IT things as a service, to keep up and get out of the leapfrog issue that we've faced in the past. This is a fun illustration. The top row represents what the data center raised floor looked like when we opened the data center. We basically took all those uneven units that those racks from agencies, and we just dumped them into the data center, basically, right? And they were all different. And then we had the mid-range and mid-range and?
Well, the Intel-based stuff.
Right. So mainframe. Thank you.
Well, mainframe.
This is where we are today, kind of in the middle. We've normalized all the different vendors. We now are simply using the same kinds of servers. And as you can see, we've reduced the amount of floor space we use with those. This is where we think we're headed. We're headed to a much more unified computing platform, getting rid of these and getting everything on the same platform, and it will be a much more efficient use of space. So, and probably more importantly than the space, utilities, cooling, and et cetera. It'll be a much more efficient operation.
Which somewhat begs the question, Mr. Jordan and Mr. Pettit, about what happens to the state data center once you've done that. And what do we do with that space? But that's not something you have to get into now.
No, but the question is a good one, Madam Chair. And the discussion that Alex was talking about just before I started with ETS regarding the assessment of those data center services that we consider to be utility. One provider should provide those services to all of state government from a business perspective. And I will submit to you, it isn't always the state data center. And so we've got some really tough business questions to answer going forward. Last February, you gave us authorization to begin a project of replacing the network hardware and the network hardware for that was really failing. It was originally purchased when we stood up the data center. It was done so on debt. We paid off the debt, but we did not save the money to replace the equipment. So after 8 years into our five-year plan and the equipment failing pretty regularly, we came and talked with you about replacing that equipment. The big thing you're going to see in agency budgets and the real pain on this is that we are replacing the equipment, but we are simultaneously developing a sinking fund to replace the equipment on its life cycle. So we are basically double paying right now for about the rest of this biennium and the next two. Actually, it's the next two and 1 year into the third is the payback. As you can see, the cash flow of the project, we've spent a fair amount of time this biennium since your authorization last February doing the procurement work and doing the planning work to actually make these changes. I will mention that the folks at the data center are working very closely with Mr. Pettit because we are re-envisioning the future of IT for ourselves, and we don't want to make significant investments in something that don't line up with the overall future. So I'll blame this on him. He has slowed them down just a bit to make sure that we're aligning our purchases with where we're headed in network services. So that's
what we can live with that kind of slowdown. Senator Whitsitt.
I just have to ask a wise question. Is that sinking fund going to be subject to sweeps?
I'll assume from the reaction that everyone knows the answer to that question, Senator.
Yes.
But we would like it on the record, Mr. Jordan.
On the record, my impression is that the legislature has authority over all those funds. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Sorry to put you on the spot.
It's okay. It is what it is. Yeah, for those watching at home. It's too hard to read on this slide, but you have it before you. This is a more detailed schedule of the different components of equipment that we're replacing in the project. We've done some of it already. As you can see, the red line represents today. And yet the bulk of a lot of the things are in the yellow bars that go out until the end of 16, I believe, for the last components in the project. Mm-hmm. So to wrap up, as Alex mentioned, we are reevaluating utility services at ETS, utilizing an engagement with all of the enterprise. The agency's CIOs are heavily involved in that discussion. We are currently outsourcing telephony, so we're not in the telephone business, or we won't be soon. So we've gone through the whole RFP process, we've gone through the evaluation process, and I believe we're negotiating the contract right now for telephony for the state. We had
some telephony in print.
We have a package in the IT budget regarding security and IT operations. I think some of you who've been here a while know that we've had multiple audits over the years to try and improve certain aspects of security. That's not just at the data center, but it's also in agencies. And so attempting to work on those, the package is in the budget. The next one, real-time budgeting. To do agency demand, what we are attempting to do in cooperation with Mr. Siebert and LFO is try to come to you on a more incremental basis as our business grows, and you could see the growth pattern. We don't want to anticipate for 2 years what that looks like, so we're trying to be more incremental and iterative, but there's a package in there around new agency demand. And then some packages we didn't move forward. We are attempting to cooperate more closely with this new system that LFO and the state CIO is putting in place regarding projects and attempting to bring you, again, more incremental requests for funding. And so we have pulled those big project funding proposals from this budget, and we will bring them to you as they meet their stage gate requirements.
Okay.
And more incremental funding for projects.
Cool. quickly, Senator Johnson, because I just want to make sure we get people out on time.
I would hope that as you develop that long-term needs, that you would articulate that to the legislature. Some of us are going to have durable futures here and we'll be around for a while. As opposed to the 10-year energy plan, which was just suffused with policy that many of us didn't agree with, a 10-year plan that shows your continuing investment over the next decade would be very useful for those of us that are going to be here to be able to argue the case of why a sweep shouldn't happen, why we ought to anticipate that it is going to come forward so that we don't just see it every 2 years.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I couldn't agree more. We will incorporate, and I know that the state CIO has a number of products regarding strategic planning and long-term planning that he has to bring to the legislature, and we'll incorporate that.
Thank you.
And that's what I have.
And we made it through an entire presentation in one day. I'm so excited. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Any further business before the committee? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
The committee? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Business before